when you are tired of washing your house, not washing your hands, you have to keep doing that, which may account for a lot of the water use, actually. A lot of people washing their hands more and more. Anyway, DIY hairstyling and sourdough making. How about a book? Kate Camp is back to choose some appropriate and comforting classics for the lockdown. Lockdown classics, Katie. Hello.
Good morning.
How many lockdown classics have you got?
Well, I've sort of got seven, but one of them is anything by Anthony Trollope, so that's like 80 books or something. So I think there's enough there to keep everyone going.
We'll get to Trollope. I've never been able to read him. He just makes my eyes.
Really?
Yeah. You can talk me into it if you can.
Oh, I'm sure I'll be able to, but it is quite hard to concentrate at the moment. And I guess one of my sort of generic recommendations for reading during the lockdown is it is a great time to reread books that you've read before, because I do quite a lot of rereading, because often the books we talk about are books that I've read earlier in life. And I think people who don't reread maybe think it's like a second best or it's a lesser experience, but I find in some ways it's even richer and more meaningful than when you read a book the first time around. And I absolutely love rereading. Yeah. And it's great for a time where it's hard to concentrate, and also, you know, you don't want to invest in a book because what if it turns out to not be good?
No,
whereas one,
right.
If you've read before, you know it's awesome.
Yeah, they're quite right. I was thinking, because one of yours is Middlemarch by George Eliot. Rebecca Mead wrote a great book called, what's it called? Middlemarch and Me, I think it was called.
Yeah.
Where she traced her many readings of that book throughout her life and explained, you know, how the readings changed. Dorothea Brooke was a great heroine for a young person, but your view of Dorothea Brooke changed as you grew older. And it's true. I mean, it's a good book is a joy forever, but in different forms as it evolves with you, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I mean, without wanting to get too postmodern on it, it's sort of like the book is reading you. You know, every time that you encounter the book at different phases of your life, you are a different you, and you have a different experience of it. So Middlemarch, I first read, I think, at university, but it's very young, early in my university time, and then I've reread it since then. I've done it a couple of, we've talked about it, and then when I went to India about 10 years ago, I thought, oh, there's going to be a bit of a culture shock. I think I'll take Middlemarch as my book. And so I read Middlemarch when I was travelling in India. So, yeah, it was the first book when the lockdown was announced. I was like, okay, shit, like, where's Middlemarch? this is what I need right now. And I'm reading it three chapters a day in unison with my mum, who's in her bubble reading it as well. So, yeah, really enjoying it.
So you got your own little bubble book club.
Yes, exactly. And, I mean, it's just, you know, it's not a perfect book, and it can be quite, it's got quite a stately pace and, you know, long sentences, and, you know, it's a 19th century novel. It, you know, it can be hard work, I suppose, if it's not the pace that you're used to. But to me, I just really, it's so capacious, and it's so, like, it appeals to both the dumbest part of you and the smartest part of you. And that, for me, is all of the books that I've looked at today are books that satisfy, yeah, both the lowest and the highest parts of your character. So I think Middlemarch, it's kind of like, it's very gossipy, it's a real soap opera, it's sprawling with so many different characters and subplots, but it's also so compassionate and wise and just very reassuring in that way.
It's time for slow reading, I've heard it said, and these books that you've talked about do require that, don't they?
Well, some do. I mean, the next one I've got on my list is The Woman in White. And it's a while since I've read The Woman in White by Wilkie Collins. But when I read this, I was like, oh, my God, this book is just ridiculously gripping. Like, it's so, so gripping. So much happens. I can remember reading it and feeling literally like I was holding my breath during some of the scenes that are so suspenseful. And it's just so mad, like so much happens in it, just crazy, crazy stuff that sort of makes you gasp out loud, and just strange twists of fortune, and, you know, dark and stormy nights, and ghostly figures escape from asylums, and people impersonating other people, and murder and hostage taking, and houses being burnt to the ground, and And the baddie in it is this Count Fosco, this wicked Italian count who's always fondling his pet mice, or his tame cockatoo is always climbing him like a mountain. It's just like, oh, it's just so bizarre, but it's absolutely gripping. So I feel like The Woman in White is the one for if you just want something where you really want to just be taken on a ride, The Woman in White is definitely up there.
I find it very hard to be absorbed by anything at the moment. I feel, even though I've got less to do, less ability to do things, I find myself twitchy. Maybe that's why, because I feel like I should be doing more things.
I just think it's a, funnily enough, it's a symptom of stress, the inability to concentrate, and it is rather a stressful time. So I think I found that as well. And I mean, I always find reading, I have to put my phone in another room. And, that's even more true at the moment. And the good thing about doing the Middlemarch, three chapters of Middlemarch is not that much. That's probably like 15 minutes or something. So having a sort of small amount that you are doing kind of makes it a little bit more manageable. But yeah, I feel like The Woman in White, if anything is going to break through your inability to concentrate, it is this book. It is just so utterly gripping. And the heroine in it, it's amazing. Like, it's when did it come out? 1859. She's climbing on roofs, she's jumping down off porches to attack baddies from above. It's just, yeah, she's absolutely amazing. So yeah, I think this is probably my bet for, switch off Zoom, Skype, FaceTime, WhatsApp, Messenger, whatever else there is. Give the kids an iPad, put the dog in the laundry. Like, you will not want to be interrupted.
That sounds amazing. I've never read that. I'll give it a go.
Oh yeah, so good.
What have we got now? Pride and Prejudice?
Well, yes, yeah, so when I first did my notes on this under the heading Pride and Prejudice, I just had, duh. Because really, do we need to say anything more about Pride and
Yeah,
Prejudice?
do
It is
we?
just a completely amazing book.
Oh.
And if you read it once in your life and enjoyed it, it's still there. It's still there. And it's still just as good. Like, you are in the hands of one of the world's great storytellers. There's never a moment, there's never a comma out of place. And it's so funny. And I think that's why this would be right up the top of my list as well. And that it's an easy read, it's very funny. If you watch the BBC Colin Firth version, you've got all that in your head, which can't be anything but a tonic. And I just think that's, it never fails to deliver. And there's so many horrible characters in it that you can like hate read. And I think that's one thing I really love about it as well. Like Mrs. Bennet is so annoying. Mr. Collins is a complete dick. And then when you think that there's no more people to hate, there's Lady Catherine de Bourgh. She gets to have that amazing standoff with Lady Catherine de Bourgh. Ah, the shades of Pemberley to be thus polluted. It's just really, really enjoyable. And I mean, I know it so well, but I think if you read it at school or at university or ages ago and enjoyed it then, honestly, when you reread it, it's just as great.
Do you think that the reading of it is now enhanced on account of Colin Firth?
Oh God, yes.
Oh, you do?
Certainly is for me.
Right.
But not just on account of Colin Firth, but also the Bridget Jones's Diary, and all the different little riffs that there's been on it over the years with the different, how Mark Darcy appears in that, as Colin Firth as Mark Darcy. And yeah, there's just so many funny pop culture moments in it. But it's also just like pound for pound, like so rewarding as a read. It's not a super long book, and the thing that surprises me when I reread it, I look back on our notes from whenever we talked about it, it's probably like 20 years ago. And the thing that surprised me then was the economy of the book. Like, I think Darcy appears on page 9, so it really rips into the action. It's a very economical and sort of efficient read. So I feel like whereas Middlemarch is a lot more sprawling, and that might be a bit challenging for people at the moment, and same with Trollope,
Well,
whereas
that's
Pride
the
and
thing
Prejudice.
about Jane Austen, isn't it? She focuses on the domestic, if you like.
But also there's a lot of plot and it happens very quickly. So
Yeah.
you don't have to, whereas George Eliot, she's always off on a sidebar meditating about the pearly light and the nature of human existence and, fields in the Midlands. And I love all that, but it's not to everyone's taste.
Somebody
But
has informed me, by the way, that Sarah Waters Fingersmith is a wonderful spin on The Woman in White.
I love Fungus Smith.
I did too.
And I absolutely agree. It's just such a... The thing that's amazing about both Fungus Smith and The Woman in White is these stunning reversals where you are reading and then poof, suddenly the plot just turns on a dime and something else turns out to be the case and you're just off in a completely different direction. So, yeah, I really, really love Fungus Smith as well.
Somebody else is saying, Woman in White, one of the best books I have ever read. Compelling and so scary at times. How interesting. I must read it. Pride and Prejudice, better than Emma, you reckon?
Well, I just think it's lighter and more perfect. I mean, I love Emma, but Pride and Prejudice is the, you know, it's. I feel like, you know, Ashley Bloomfield's going to be starting to recommend it from the podium soon because I feel like it is the antidote, it is the cure. It's just the one thing that it has the power to just delight you.
Gone with the Wind.
Yeah, now this is a surprise to a lot of people because I think a lot of people don't really think about or know that Gone with the Wind was a book. But Gone with the Wind, before it was a movie, was a massive, massive US bestseller, like huge. It totally broke all of the records for best-selling books, and it still remains one of the most often voted favourite books in America after the Bible. And it's just such a ripping yarn. So it's set, you know, I mean, obviously, I guess if anyone's seen the movie, they know the story. It's set in the Civil War, but the movie barely scratches the surface. Like, Margaret Mitchell was a journalist, and it's got a very journalistic sort of style, and her father was president of the Atlanta Historical Society, and she is absolutely steeped in the history of the Civil War, and that comes through in every page. So it's kind of like a sprawling historical epic, but written with that sort of journalistic verve, and a very, very easy read. Like, I often recommend it. It's 1,100 pages. It's massive.
It is quite fat, isn't it?
It's huge, but I often recommend it for people going on long overseas trips because it's a really easy, ripping read. It's not, you know, it's not War and Peace, even though I love War and Peace, but it's just a really easy but satisfying read. And it's quite, it came out just after the Depression, so although it's set in the Civil War, it's also very kind of, you can read it in that light and that sort of hard scrabble existence that people are coming out of, and, you know, the famous sort of lines from it of her, you know, I'll never be hungry again. You know, I think it's really interesting to see it through the lens of its time as well. But yeah, I just love it. And then it's also very sexy, like, you know, the Rhett Butler, you know, the muscles of his big body rippled against his well-tailored clothes as he got him beside her. And as always, the sense of his great physical power struck her like a blow. It's just like really super, super erotic. So
I was interested to read that Margaret Mitchell was interested in erotica. And while she was writing Gone with the Wind, she was reading a lot of porn, like Fanny Hill and The Perfume Garden and Sexology and stuff like that. So clearly she was applying it, I think, don't you?
Yeah, I think so. And I didn't know that, but it's no surprise given the nature of the, you know, how every time Rhett Butler appears, he's, you know, the swell of his powerful shoulders against the cloth was disturbing and a little frightening. He was lazy as a panther stretching in the sun, blah, blah, blah. So, yeah.
It's all very shades of,
Yeah, well, another one that I think that you really love and that I love as well is The Go-Between. And
I do love The Go-Between.
It's not a very widely read book, and I don't understand why.
Because it's so sad. It's too sad.
Is it, though?
Yes.
Is it?
Yes.
I suppose it is. But it's just so great. So the past is a foreign country. They do things differently there. If you have no other reason for reading The Go-Between, it will give you the legitimate right to use that phrase constantly. Which is a very useful phrase at the moment. So, yeah, I mean, I absolutely love The Go-Between. It's kind of like a crime thriller in many ways, but it's also a coming-of-age story. And like all English books up to about 1968, it's about the class system, really, is what it's really about. But it looks back on a single summer where a young middle-class boy, the son of a bank manager, I think, goes to stay in an aristocratic country house of a friend, and he sort of discovers dark secrets along with a really freaky plant that's growing there. But it is exquisitely sad, I guess, but I don't know, I just love it and I find it really gripping.
Yeah. I think I find it sad because of the inevitability. It's got that sort of Greek drama thing going on where it's so identifiably recalled that you just know it's going to end badly in some way.
But also it's a book, the narrator is a man in his 60s looking back on a summer from when he was 8 or 9, and that in itself is an exquisitely nostalgic, sort of it bathes it in a sort of nostalgic glow. But yeah, it's got some great sort of social commentary in there when he's in the house, like his rich friend said to him, you mustn't come down to breakfast in your slippers. It's the sort of thing that bank clerks do. And later he says, only cads ate their porridge sitting down. Oh, these arcane rules that this poor boy is trying to get his head around.
You have 1 minute. You have 1 minute to persuade me about the Trollop.
Well, Anthony Trollope, how about this? The quote from the Daily Telegraph, you know, he is, I don't know what, oh, here it is. Why did Freud bother? This is so much better and truer. I think that's absolutely true of Trollope. You know, it's all about character and human nature and these sprawling sort of novel series. And they may be on quite a small scale, or some of them are about who's the next prime minister, but they're just... yeah, you can immerse yourself in them and just dive in and stay there. And then my final just few seconds endorsement has to go to David Copperfield. I absolutely love that book. It is just such a heartfelt, beautiful book. And I know some people find Charles Dickens difficult, but oh, that book is absolutely beloved to me. So, yeah, I just love David Copperfield and that poor wee boy. It is a matter of some surprise to me that I can have been so easily thrown away at such an age.
In the olden days, I would have gone to the movie The Personal History of David Copperfield, directed by Armando Iannucci. So I'm hoping to be able to see that at some stage in the rest of my life. Thank you, Kate. Kate Camp. I did try and read the Barchester Chronicles in bed last night. It fixed my insomnia, sure enough. Next week, maybe Ken Burns, maybe Colin Thupron.